When you look at the potential advantages of biosimilars, is it pretty much cost or any other potential advantages?
Well, of course, it is primarily cost, but that has ripple effects. As I mentioned, drug access and the financial impact on patients. If a biologic is the appropriate treatment for their care and they have options and their insurers or payers or their health system have options to utilize less expensive versions of this, it may improve access. We know that financial toxicity is a huge issue in cancer care in the U.S. It deters some patients even going through treatment or for stopping treatment early or simply not getting the optimal type of treatment. And I think that's the hope here. It's not just the price, although we're all concerned about the cost of health care, but it's quality of care, access to care. And this led, you may have seen the President's Cancer Panel recently issued a report to the White House about the cost of health care in general, pretty much focused on oncology and strongly encouraging the White House and the federal government to do whatever they can to encourage the development of biosimilars as a mechanism, not the only one, to rein in the cost of cancer care.
You know, it's interesting, as a purveyor of continuing medical education, I'm always trying to figure out to what extent is our audience going to find a topic interesting. And when you look into the biosimilar story, it's really fascinating in terms of how you look at the data. We're going to get into it in a second. But it kind of, I have the feeling that maybe right now at this particular instant, I'm not sure how strong of motivation there is in both oncologists and even patients to decrease the cost. Often, it's not going to really be reflected on the patient. Sometimes, yes, or copays, et cetera. But, you know, without any other real motivation to use a biosimilar, I don't know how strong at an individual level a doc or even a patient might be to try to decrease costs because, you know, if you get down to it, you'll never be able to 100% reassure either the doc or patient that they're going to see the same thing without a phase three study. But the thing that I've been thinking about is that the day could come very, very quickly when that the whole construct maybe would change. And either patients or physicians, maybe with a different structuring of how payment is made, how value is determined, I'm not even sure, that could change maybe quickly. And at that point, these issues might become much more pragmatic. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right. There's enormous uncertainty about where we're going to be in terms of payment models and pay-for-performance measures. You know, different organizations, ASCOs and others, have proposed different approaches, but we absolutely don't know. It's so politicized. And I agree with you completely. It's unknown how much cost or price as a driver will change practice, particularly in the U.S., which is, at least my experience having lived in Europe as well as most of my life in the U.S., a far more independent and self-driving type of philosophy of medical care in the U.S. Physicians want to be able to do what's best for their patients and not be told what to do. And so they're going to both need evidence that these drugs are safe and effective and they're not compromising the patient's care. But hopefully, on top of that, we'll begin to see some impact on healthcare delivery costs and so forth. But I think it's really the safety and efficacy issue, which is paramount. As I talk with colleagues around the country, there's skepticism about these agents. They've pretty much accepted generics, sometimes kicking and screaming, but they've come on board with most of those, a lot of it being kind of pushed down their throats, so to speak. But I think most of our experiences have been pretty good there.